So what are the best practices for effective tax and incentive management? And here they are talking mainly of VAT and GST. So reduce the burden of VAT, GST in terms of absolute cost and in terms of negative cash flow. So here there are two things, you know, in case of value-added tax, VAT or GST, actually GST is also a value-added tax, you get a credit. So if you are a business who is using this material for the key business purpose, then you will get a set-off or a credit of the tax. And when you sell the product, then again you are, you know, from the kitty, from the credit, from the pool, you are paying the duty and, you know, you're charging to the customer. And the customer is actually paying for the tax. So the tax is actually not a burden. But yes, you are investing in the working capital. Simple example, if you are taking, let's say, buying a material which is 100 rupee worth, let us say there is a GST of 18 rupees on it at 18%. So the moment you buy this material, you are getting a credit of 18 rupees. Cost of material to you is 100 rupees. What you have to pay to the supplier is 118 rupees because of the 18 rupee tax which is contained in the invoice. Now, when you sell the material, you are adding value, and let us say you are selling this material at 200 rupees per kg. So there you're going to pay a GST of at 18%, which will be 36 rupees. So you are actually blocking your working capital. So if you have 60 days credit, then this 36 rupees along with the cost of the material, which is 200 rupees, or rather the price of the material, which is 200 rupees, will be your working capital, which is blocked in the form of your outstanding. So one way is, like we said, if you are an exporting unit, you try to bring the material without payment of duty. The benefit you have is that you are not, firstly, not paying the duty. So you are saving your working capital there. Even in case of import duty, let us say that you import the material on payment of duty and then you subsequently export it, and then you seek a refund of the import duty which you have paid. So you have already paid the money. It's a working capital that you have already employed. And after you export the material, you make a request for refund of the duties which were paid on the import. So this is the working capital, your working capital, which has been blocked up. So if you are using a scheme whereby you don't pay the duty in the first place, that is a working capital that you have saved. So you have actually used, reduced the working capital requirement for the business in this fashion. Maximization of the positive VAT or GST cash flow on sales and procurement. Many a times it so happens, this happened with one of my companies, where the input credit we were getting was on the higher side, and this I'm talking during the excise regime. So the input credit was at 25%, but the finished product attracted 18% excise duty, 18 or 16%, I don't remember. So we had a positive cash flow because we used to have more input credit, and more or less we used to pay our excise duty on the output, on the finished product, from the credits that we were accumulating. There was very little money that we were required to put into the kitty, in the excise kitty. So this kind of a positive cash flow is the ideal situation. And as a effective procurement manager, one has to look at this kind of possibilities. Reduce the cost of compliance and the risk of incurring penalties. So you have to comply with all the relevant laws, local laws. And unfortunately, you know, in India, the GST, etc., after the financial year is over, after a year or two, you will have the audit or the assessment from the revenue department. If there is any non-compliance which is found, you will be required to pay the difference, and I repeat again, you will have to pay interest and you will have to pay the penalties. So it's quite a daunting thing that any non-compliance is going to cost you a lot of money. So important thing is that you comply with the laws in such a way that there are no non-compliances, no non-conformances, and you don't incur the penalties. So this is a very important area. Adopting an effective and efficient VAT or GST management framework for identification, quantification and management of transactions and cross-border movement of goods throughout the end-to-end supply chain. And if you have an ERP system, many of these things are managed, because in ERP systems, seamlessly you are managing even your taxation. Not only do you manage your business, your the inventory transactions, your manufacturing operations, the movement or the stocks of your raw material, intermediates, work in process, finished goods, but also your taxes. And especially in a situation like ours, where you have the ERP system which is integrated for the organization across countries, so there even movement of goods, the taxation, everything is seamlessly captured, and you have very little chances of actually having a non-compliance, unless someone makes a mistake in defining the correct duties or taxes in the system, and then you have paid the duties wrongly. Only in such a case, you would. But then again, there have to be sufficient checks and balances to ensure that this kind of errors don't occur. Mapping out the VAT GST transaction flows to the business processes and against cost to identify opportunities to eliminate or reduce VAT GST cost and improve the cash flow. These we have already covered, that you need to have a clear visibility on the various kind of transactions that you do. There are companies which are also, doing job work outside. That means you are sending out raw material and you're getting the products either semi-processed or fully processed, and then you bring it back again, you rebrand it, and then you sell it as your product. So in all these kind of transactions, one needs to map it and look at the possibilities where we can improve the cash flow by identifying the correct processes and opportunities that we can identify to improve the cash flow. Standardization and automation of end-to-end processes, especially accounts receivables and account payable processes. Normally in an ERP system, these are very standardized and they are automated. So, but for those organizations which probably do not have such an integrated ERP, these systems need to be standardized and they have to be integrated. Centralizing indirect tax compliance in global or regional shared service centers. So this is the new concept that globally is very popular, where you have a shared service center. So you have one shared service center in one country, where you have a group of people who are experts on the subject, and they may be maintaining the tax compliance for the entire region. So it could be that you have a shared service center in India, which is, let's say, managing the tax compliance for the whole of Asia, or it could be also the whole of the global. Currently, my company, we are working with this kind of a shared service center, which is only for Asia, because the tax implications and the kind of tax laws are very much different from continent to continent. But this helps a great deal in holistically looking at the tax compliance and the implications. So it allows you to optimize your tax management. Routing cross-border movement of goods to make best use of import value-added tax and GST deferments, free trade zones, reverse charge accounting, and other aspects to improve cash flow and avoid irrecoverable without input credit or refund VAT and GST. So we talked about it, that there are certain taxes where you don't get any refund or you don't get a credit, whereas there are some other taxes where you get 100% credit. So the whole purpose of this statement is that one has to aim for a methodology, a material flow, where you are paying duties which are passed on to the next stage. That means you get a credit, when you ship the material, you pay it out. Or like we said, in case of the bonded warehouse, etc., where you avoid paying the import duty. So it could be either a bonded warehouse, or you are locating yourself in a SEZ or so, where you are spared the effort of incurring certain costs which are not recoverable. So best practices for effective tax and incentive management. Now we are talking of the custom duties. Ensure compliance to all activities and process involved in customs. Again, compliance is the key, because if you are not complying, you could be actually saddled with penalties. So you need to be firstly aware, right classification of the material has to be done so that you're paying the right kind of duty. Wherever you are bringing in material for re-export, you declare the product accordingly so that you can avail of the schemes, the export incentive schemes, like duty-free imports, etc., advanced license, passbook schemes, etc. Adopt effective custom duty management framework throughout the supply chain, covering end-to-end activities. Self-explanatory, I will not actually elaborate further on this. Use of economic custom procedures and custom planning tools, for example, harmonized system of classification where available. Now, most of the countries, including India, are today using the harmonized system of classification. We also call it as the HSN code, which makes it very easy to classify the product across countries. And there is no scope for manipulation of the classification, that, from country to country, you declare the goods differently. But one must make use of it, for a very quick clearance of goods in the completion of the custom procedures, etc. As you know, India, we are already working with the EDI system. You have the faceless assessment of the custom duties, etc. So the system is fairly speedy. And if your documentation and everything is done correctly, you can have your goods cleared very, very promptly. Routing cross-border movements through free trade zones and other locations to make the best use of free trade agreements. So as I said, that if you have a free trade agreement with a country, it's best to actually source material from that country, all other things being equal. Because you are going to gain, even without any, special export obligations also, you can still avail of lower duty or even in some cases zero duty. Even free trade zones, etc., as I said, if you are essentially an export unit, then you don't have to every time, comply with so many procedures. You can import the material duty-free, process the material, re-export it with much less documentation and much less compliance. So, strategically, if you are positioned as an export unit where you know that 80% of your production is going to be exported, then the ideal thing would be that you locate your manufacturing unit in an export zone. Optimizing the purchasing through imports of goods to maximize the use of custom procedures and duty benefits, that is avoiding procurement from origin which is subject to anti-dumping duty. So we already talked of two examples. One is Pakistan, the other is certain products, like for example, some of the material coming from China are subject to anti-dumping duty. So you avoid bringing this material unless you find that in spite of the anti-dumping duty, they come out cheaper as compared to the other sources. So again, this is a something that needs to be constantly reviewed. But here also there is a risk, because let us say today the anti-dumping duty is 10%, and you find that even after paying 10% anti-dumping duty, you are able to economically get the material cheaper than other sources. But imagine that the government tomorrow increases the anti-dumping duty to 20%, then you will be at a risk as far as the material which is already on order or already in transit. Using accreditations of various organizations, like SAARC, to transit goods more quickly through international borders without any hassles. So if you are transacting between SAARC nations, then the moment the clearance of the goods will be much faster. All these countries, wherever we have a free trade agreement or a bilateral trade agreement, etc. But the important thing here is there are requirement for specific documents. Like for example, even for a free trade agreement, if you want to avail of concessional duty, you will have to get the certificate of origin in a particular prescribed format issued by a competent authority. Only then you will be allowed to avail the concessional duty or zero rate of duty. So if you're going to import the material by air, you cannot avail of the benefit, because the material would arrive in 1 day or 2 days and the certificate of origin would take longer to arrive. But when you bring in material by sea, typically let's say if you're bringing material from Asia, it would take you 3 to 4 weeks, and that's good enough time for the seller to get the certificate of origin from the local authorities and then courier it to you, and you can avail of the benefit. So again, these are all strategic decisions that one has to take. Linking the use of special customs regimes in the end-to-end supply chain for optimizing the custom duty incidence. The example we have already taken, so where you are going to export the material, we said that either you take advanced license or the passbook scheme, or you can even set up the manufacturing in a SEZ or a export zone, so that you are getting certain special benefits or custom duty rates are applicable to you. Avoid sourcing goods on which the excise duty is irrecoverable unless absolutely necessary and if there is no other alternative. So in some cases you will find that you have no alternative. Like for example, you may find that there is an anti-dumping duty on a material. Anti-dumping duty cannot be set off. It is a cost which gets added on to your product. But if you have no other option for the material, you may have to import the material from a country where anti-dumping duty will be applicable, and you will have to pay the duty on it. So where possible, one has to avoid if that is adding to your cost. Use the manufacturing locational advantage for availing certain excise duty related benefits. So if the exporting country has certain advantages, or there are some incentives offered. For example, we tend to import many of the products from Indonesia simply because of the FTA, and we bring many materials at the concessional rate of 5% import duty, few products even at 0% duty. Thankfully, because we have our own affiliate which is operating in Indonesia, so we have this advantage. But as compared to the other affiliates, bringing it from Indonesia is advantageous. So this kind of benefits has to be kept in mind while making procurement decisions. Adopting an effective management incentive identification, quantification, and management framework to gain maximum benefit out of the incentive structure. So we have already talked about it, that for tax and incentive, both have to be looked together. Both are part of the same coin. They're two sides of the same coin. So on one side, you have the tax. As we said, you try and see that you incur taxes which can be set off, where credits can be taken, and wherever possible, we need to take the incentive so as to reduce the implication of the taxes or the additional costs. The global sourcing manager can look forward to centralize the activities related to management of grants, incentives to improve controls, improve decision making, and maximize the benefit. So if the global manager can factor this into the ERP system, where you can very easily simulate what would be the cost to your company if you were to import the product from, let's say, multiple locations, which would be most beneficial to you. Periodically evaluate the benefits available compared with the compliance conditions and the cost. As on account of dynamic business environment, the decision may become unviable, that is, issuance of new policy, withdrawal of incentive, expiry of incentive, etc. So we have already discussed this in the previous discussion, that it's a dynamic thing. You have to constantly monitor the incentives and the compliances which are required for availing of the incentive, because it can so happen that you may want to let go the incentive for a bigger benefit. Sometimes you may be compromising on the quality just to avail of the the incentive or the benefit. So this one has to constantly reevaluate, reassess whether you wish to take advantage of the incentive or not. Maybe there are some incentive that you may decide to forego. So but this has to be done very consciously. Identifying potential investment destinations, industrial policy, investment policy, state benefits, and negotiating investment packages that are. So we saw that government always introduces certain incentives for attracting investments, or encouraging people or businesses to set up shop in certain areas which are identified for development. And one has to be aware of such destinations, and even some of the benefits can be negotiated based on the kind of industry that you have to derive maximum coverage or mileage out of it. Tailored to the company's needs to maximize the benefit. This is a continuation of the previous point. So obviously, you're looking at the benefit or the incentives as they are applicable to your company and the kind of business that you are into. Combining grants or credits for new investments, employment, and R&D, etc., to minimize input cost throughout the end-to-end supply chain activity. So this is to be looked at holistically. See, it's not that if you are getting a concession in terms of property tax, or you are getting, benefits on the cost of the land, you find that the location is remote, and for the kind of operations that you have, you require very skilled people who are required to visit your facility for maintenance purpose or for repair purpose, etc. So one has to consider this entire thing very holistically. And it's not that a simple decision. You have to look at overall what is the benefit that the company is going to gain after taking advantage of the incentives being offered. Thank you.